Hello and a very warm welcome to Business by Outra, the sports and business podcast. My name is Kim Schulze and I regularly have the honor of talking to special personalities from the outdoor and sporting good industry. In cooperation with Outra, the ecosystem for the outdoor bike and sports industry, whose digital tools optimize the customer journey and increase the sales of brands and their retail partners. Together, we look at relevant content through the eyes of industry experts and enthusiasts. Today, on the 11th of October, I meet Dan Trapp. Hi, dear Dan.
Hi, Kim. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm fine. I'm fine. And I'm looking very forward to our 40-ish minute session today. You are a headhunter, saying in my words, for the outdoor and sporting good industry. You are a connecting personality and you are underlining this as well, a wonderful podcaster. So it would be wonderful if you share something like a personal intro on yourself, with leaving maybe a little the business away, because then our listeners can listen on a different level to yourself. So something like where you live, why do you live there, how was your life until now, personality wise. So let us know who you are, please.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for the invitation. First of all, it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to chat today. So I'm a Brit, but living in France, in fact, the southwest of France. So the nearest city probably the audience will have heard of is Bordeaux. So we're about 90 minutes east of Bordeaux. But I work globally, so I'm traveling a lot. And actually, over my life, I've lived and worked in the UK, France, Switzerland, Finland. So yeah, all over Europe, let's say, for companies that are coming from Europe, but also Americas and also Asia as well. So a reasonable global perspective. I'm married. My wife is French, although that's actually ironically not why we live in France. And I think she most enjoyed it when we were living in London, whereas I actually prefer living in France. We have a 12-year-old son, a dog, and a couple of chickens. So, I loved having chickens every day, getting up, going to get fresh eggs, having a poached egg in the morning is, I love it. That's my morning routine. So that's great. Other than that, I'm passionate about, spending time with my family because of my work. I do travel a reasonable amount. So when I'm home, I love spending time together. Usually we spend that outdoors. And of course, outdoor sports is, definitely a key passion. And I think within that more specifically, I love hiking, biking, then in the summer, paddleboarding, kayaking, in the winter, skiing. And when I get the opportunity, which is pretty rare, I love to scuba dive as well. Although I'm a little bit of a fair weather scuba diver, I would say. I'm not so good in cold waters. I'm passionate about personal development. We'll maybe get onto this later, but I wasn't kind of big into education when I was young, whereas now I love to kind of continually develop myself, learn new things. But also I like to develop others, and I think that's a strong motivation throughout my career. And last but not least, I think another passion is definitely traveling and really experiencing other cultures. As I said, having lived and worked in different countries, I think the ability and the option to travel and experience those cultures is great. And I really love that.
Wonderful introduction. Thank you so much. So for everything which is in combination to you love learning, you love traveling, I think you found recently, maybe a little longer, I don't know, you need to judge, a wonderful position in your business life. So maybe you can start with a short CV and all the stories on that, because it's wonderful to listen to everything that happened to you. So let us know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I guess the first thing to say is that I consider myself to be super lucky. You know, I've spent pretty much 30 years now working in the sports and the outdoor industry. So initially in specialty retail in the UK, then that was for that was 7-8 years. Then I spent 13 years with Columbia Sportswear. And I remember, I wanted to get into sales initially, but I was coming from retail. And in those days, you were always told, oh, well, you can't get into sales unless you have sales experience. And I was like, yeah, but how do you get experience if you can't get into sales? So actually, my first step was as a visual merchandiser for Columbia Sportswear in the UK. And then I quickly had opportunity to move into sales and did multiple, pretty much all roles in the UK. So, VM, sales rep, field sales manager, key account manager, country manager. And then actually I moved to Europe. So then I became sales manager for Europe for Columbia. So working in Geneva, living in France. And then after 13 years, unfortunately, my position was made redundant. So that was a tough period for me. It took me a good few months to mentally get over that, having been so committed for so long to one company.
In which year are we?
That's a good question. We are 2014. So yeah, I joined Columbia 2001, left 2014. And yeah, that was a tough period. So I know a lot of people in our industry are going through this now. There's been a lot of layoffs with a lot of different businesses in the last 12, even 24 months. So it is tough. But fortunately, I was then connected with the brand Hoka. In fact, my wife was working with Hoka quite in the very early days when they were still based in Annecy in France. And so I joined Hoka, looking after sales for Northern Europe. And at that point, we actually moved back to the UK and lived in London for a little while. But then I had a phone call from an old colleague who said, there might be an opportunity to join Salomon in probably what was my dream job, which was global commercial director for a brand that, I had loved since back in my retail days. I remember selling Salomon skis and boots like crazy back in my retail days. And so, yeah, even though I joined Hoka relatively recently, I spent just 1 year at Hoka. The opportunity to join Salomon as global commercial director was too good to turn down. So we moved back to France and I spent 5 years at Salomon. So initially, as I said, as global commercial director, and then I took over as vice president of the apparel and gear category. So led the apparel and gear business all the way from product creation to go to market. And then after 5 years at Salomon, I found myself in a situation that I didn't ever expect to. I remember actually being at ISPO in 2020. So the last ISPO in January before obviously COVID hit. And ISPO for me has always been this great opportunity to reconnect with old colleagues, old friends, see what's happening in the industry, and kind of re-energize myself. And for whatever reason at the time, I didn't feel like that. I was kind of walking around and didn't feel good, didn't have good energy. And I thought, it had been 27 years at that point in the industry. So I was thinking, maybe I need a break. So I took the decision then to look for an opportunity outside of the industry. And I was fortunate enough to be approached by a headhunter for a position. So the chief sales officer for a Finnish lifestyle brand called Marimekko. And if you have any Finnish audience, they will know the brand very well. I mean, it has a 98% brand recognition in Finland. I mean, it's really an iconic brand. So I did that for 2 years, but I probably ironically, given I'd just left it, I really missed the industry, the sports and the outdoor industry. I missed the people, the community, the camaraderie, the collaboration. I missed that. But at the same time, I'd spent 21 years working for public companies. So I felt like I wanted to do something for myself. And that's what led me to starting my own business almost 2 years ago now. So yeah, my second anniversary is next month. So I set myself up as an executive recruiter or headhunter. And yeah, I focus on, let's say, senior leadership positions within our industry. And I specialize within three kind of functional areas. So general management positions, so C-suite positions, but also go-to-market position, so sales, marketing, and also product creation, so anything within that product creation silo. So that's what I'm doing now. I love it. It's completely different, and running your own business brings its own stress and brings its own challenges for sure. But I also like the freedom that comes with it. So that's what I'm doing now.
Yep. An interesting journey, especially if it comes to this fatigueness, let's call it like this, for the industry sometimes. And I, of course, share it. I share it from the roles of brands or in my time on this boat, when it was like, okay, how can we invent? And it's the same situation now. But still, it's always, if you look back, maybe something like you, of course, greener it more than it was green. I don't know. Anyhow, but seeing, and this is why we both do podcasts, I guess, because the personalities behind that give us energy, and it's the appreciation which is shared because you want to hear what others say and other way around. So anyhow, thanks for sharing. And for our red thread right now would be exactly what you experienced. When is a very good chance for personal step up? Could be knowledge, could be position, could be also, of course, salary or whatever drives people. And on the other side, in a market disruption period where we are right now, it's not always easy to choose the right steps for whether our own personalities and with the people you work with. It's, of course, always in the responsibility of a lot of people. So this is where we are into for us. In the next question for you, it would be, if you drive HR with your inspirational part of working for brands, so you do not only work for the personalities, but also for brands, we see, or I feel it as a combination of responsibility and of growth opportunities, but also, of course, after the maximum disruption in 22, you need to make sure that everybody's taking the risk balance on the right way. Because bringing in people which need to leave then and make redundant some weeks. Yeah. So do you want to share the status somehow? Is that?
Yeah, I think it's, I think firstly, I would say that, you know, HR as a function within companies is often underutilized and misunderstood. I think, unfortunately, in many businesses, it's seen as a support function and almost an administrative function. And I think that's a great shame because, for me, HR should be a real strategic pillar within any business, because at the end of the day, as much as we all believe that equity in a business comes from the product or the brand, fundamentally, product and brand comes through people. So the ability of any business to build an engaged, motivated organization is vital to their short, mid, and long-term success. And HR should play a key role in that. And unfortunately, I would say in many companies, it doesn't. It's just more of a support service. I think in terms of the challenges that HR or any organization is facing right now, for me, one of the biggest is employee engagement. When we look at the figures coming out of a Gallup survey, the state of employee engagement, they launch a new survey every year. And in 2022, if we look at the global employed population, 87% of that population is disengaged. And only 87%, so 87, yeah, is disengaged. So only 13% engaged. Now, that 87% is split into two areas. You have 72%, let's say, not engaged, which another way to describe that is people that are quiet quitting, that are in their jobs, they're doing the bare minimum, and they're getting by. Then you have 15% that are actively disengaged. So these are the people that are could be potentially toxic in a work environment, could be certainly having a negative impact. They're the ones that are speaking badly about the company, about the boss, or whatever it might be. And those figures, I mean, your reaction actually is exactly the way it should be. I mean, those figures are and should be very scary. Now, I think our industry, if we did a survey just in our industry, which unfortunately we don't have, but those figures won't be as bad, I believe, because many of the people in our industry are drawn to the industry because of their passion for sport and the outdoors. So that connection, that passion, I would say, helps to maintain a level of engagement. But nevertheless, it's not going to be dramatically different. So still, it's something that needs to have more attention given to it.
And maybe adding, without losing the red thread, what you wanted to say, please remember. But if I would judge for my personal surrounding right now and the job I do, then I would definitely differentiate between the passion we all have for the industry and the brand itself and the working conditions, etc. So that would be, I think, in every field of play. So if it's 87% and quiet leaving, etc., I think it's always, we had that right after Corona in a huge way for those. Is it really the working surrounding, or is it also personal life and personal changes and everything which is behind? So anyhow.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, the point about Corona and COVID is very real. And at least I can say that for me, it had a very big impact on me in a negative way, I would say, as it did many people. As I mentioned, you know, I took the decision to leave Salomon in 2020. And even though I was thinking about it at the start of the year, COVID, I would say, was the, let's say, the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm not sure how well that translates, but it was the final straw. It was the thing that took my decision, because I consider myself to be an introvert. You know, being in a social setting with a lot of people for me is a massive energy drainer, and it's very difficult. And I have to really invest time and energy to not only do well in those environments, but just survive those environments somehow. So when COVID came, I felt like, this is brilliant. This is going to be perfect for me. You know, I'm going to be working on my own at home. It's going to be great. But actually the opposite happened. I actually realized that I need the energy and the engagement of others to maintain that motivation, to maintain that passion in terms of developing others and, you know, being with people in the physical sense actually was critical for me. So when that was taken away, that really was what ultimately led to me taking the final decision to step away from Salomon. So I think since COVID, these numbers have decreased for sure. But they're not rebounding, let's say, quickly. They are improving year on year, but at a very slow rate. And I think we haven't yet found the good way to really lead in this hybrid environment that we now operate in, you know, with a mixture of working from home, of being in the office, which I think is what most businesses now operate within our sector. So yeah, I think, I know for me it was a really difficult time. It had a negative impact on my mental health, which then had a negative impact on my physical health, and then you get into a bit of a spiral. So it was a really difficult period. But I also think in those times you learn a lot about yourself. You learn actually what is important to you and what motivates you. And even though I thought before that actually I would be better away from people, I missed that energy that people gave me. So somewhat ironically.
When you started with your own introduction, you said that ISPO and all these kind of platform meetings, etc., are like the energy you need. And on the other side, it's always how much can we really pack into 4 days and how does that feel, etc. So the contradictive is there anyhow. Maybe you would have described it differently
before COVID what really runs you, because it showed so many things. So maybe if we see our B2B listeners for this podcast and for everything we share in terms of this is business intelligence and this is knowledge, if can you give us an overview on where the situation is right now for hybrid working and home office rules or openness, or where is our industry? Is that something you want to share?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, of course, it's difficult to generalize in these situations because it varies quite dramatically company to company. But if I take an average of the situation, most businesses now operate a hybrid model. So most are 3 days in the office, 2 days remote. Some it's 4 and 1. But I would say that's kind of where we're sitting at the moment. It definitely varies, though, in terms of the function and the location of the organization and where you're working. So, for example, if you're working in a creative position at a headquarters of a company, of a brand, for example, then there is a little bit more desire for people to be more based in the office than less. Whereas and I think that's driven, of course, by the energy that's created by the ability to work together. Let's say other functions, commercial functions, finance functions, there seems to be more willingness to allow a little bit more flexibility in terms of time working outside of the office, so working at home or wherever it might be. But it does vary company to company. I think the biggest challenge, though, is still that leading effectively remotely is still very difficult for many people. First of all, it's very difficult, full stop. When you're all together in an office, it's easier for sure. When you're over Teams or Zoom or whatever it might be, it's difficult to lead. That's the reality. And I think we still have some way to go to find the best and the right solution for how we approach that model, whether it's regular one-on-ones, team meetings. But fundamentally, you still do not get those moments before and after meetings, next to the coffee machine, when actually usually that's where a lot of the pertinent topics come out, because people are sometimes afraid to say things in what is somehow quite a formal environment, being on a Zoom call or on a Teams call. So I think missing that part, that kind of informal opportunity to discuss and collaborate is difficult for many people, many leaders.
And this would directly lead to the question, where is leadership right now, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a question a little in some minutes right now. So I think that, as you said, 2-3 days is the normal, and the everything which is around IT, et cetera, et cetera. All clear for us both, but maybe you can give us in the combination to how do you work as a headhunter, as an agency, and how do you experience the work with HR? It would be, I think, if I would not be in that position where I work, and if I would not have the opportunity to be a podcaster somehow somewhere, I would not really know. So maybe it could be a good question for, okay, we are in here and beginning Q4, or everything is already leading to 25. Most of the people we work with are in 26. HR has somehow different rhythms, of course, but maybe it would be good for our listeners to have like a holistic overview. How do you work? How do HR work? What's the process? You can be quite precise on your journey from the first call or something general.
The first thing I would say is that as a headhunter, as a recruiter, our client, our primary client is the business. I think there is still some misunderstanding that we work for candidates. And the reality is I could spend and here I'm not exaggerating, I could spend all day, every day, just talking to candidates. And as rewarding as that would be, at the end of the day, that doesn't pay the bills, because fundamentally, the way it works when you're a recruiter, when you're a headhunter, is you're given a mandate by a client, and they would say to me, Dan, you know, we're looking for a commercial director to lead our European business. So the process that I would then go through with that client is to have a very, very in-depth briefing to understand not only the skills and competencies and experiences that are required, but also to understand the personality, the behaviors that are needed to succeed within that role and within that environment. We would explore that in quite detail. I think there are many people are hired for skills and are fired for attitude. And there's often this disconnect and lack of awareness, I would say, of, you know, what is the personality that somebody needs to have to thrive within this organization. So I spend a lot of time on that, as well as on the skills and the competencies, which for me are almost somehow secondary, because those things you can often learn, whereas personality behavior tends to be a fundamental part of our own makeup. So then once I've built a full profile of the type of candidate that the client is looking for to fill that role, then I will go away and I will map the market. So I gave the example there of a commercial director for Europe. So for that type of role, I would probably map around 100 people, where I believe, okay, these 100 people, just looking at a very high level of their experience and competencies, they can do the role. Then I will reach out to those 100 people. Normally, I would engage with about 80 of those. It's normally about 80%. The other 20% maybe don't come back, don't answer the calls, don't answer the emails, whatever it might be. So then with those 80, I'll go through a short screening to really, on a surface level, identify, does what it says on their CV or on their LinkedIn really, is that the reality? And does that match the brief? And then from those 80, I would narrow that down to between 10 and 12 that are the best matched, and then do a much deeper assessment. So do a 90-minute video interview assessment, where we're really looking at their specific experiences, getting them to share examples, how they dealt with problems. But also they would conduct a online behavioral assessment, so that we build up a behavioral picture of their personality to be able to compare that to the benchmark that we built with the client at the start. Then after those 10, 12, let's say, in-depth assessments, we then will present usually five candidates to the client for that we believe are the most qualified, the best fit in terms of personality and behavior for the client. And then at that point, the client will then review those with us and take the decision, okay, we want to interview 3, 4, whatever it might be, people. And then it kind of moves into the process of the client. So I guess what we're doing is we're making sure that when our clients are then finally meeting candidates, that they're not wasting time with meeting people that don't fit, and that those people have gone through a very robust process to make sure that, you know, they really are a good fit, they are a high performer, you know, all of those things are checked and followed up on to make sure that they really fit and that they can deliver against the brief of the client. But it doesn't just end there. You know, once we've got to that point of assessing, we then really manage the relationship with the candidate through this process to make sure that their experience is good. Because I think one of the reasons actually I got into recruiting was because in my experience as both a hiring manager and a candidate, the experience of working with recruiters had been mixed. Not to say there weren't some good experiences, there definitely were. but oftentimes the communication was not great, the follow-up was not great. So for me, it's really important that we provide a really great experience for the candidate all the way through the process, and that we're supporting them and guiding them, we're coaching them, we're preparing them for the interviews, we're providing them with a great experience in terms of information so that they're prepared to represent themselves in the best way.
I love that thing of the personal journey, because that's definitely something which I experienced when we did that for another brand for some roles. It was so obvious that you can feel the difference.
I mean, I, as you can probably imagine, I spend quite a lot of time on LinkedIn in my role, and it upsets me. I would say I get upset at least weekly when I see stories about poor experiences that candidates have had, whether they're ghosted. I mean, the common thing is people, you know, their recruiters reach out to them, speak to them, say they'll get back to them, and then they never hear from them again and don't respond to messages and emails, etc. And, you know, that drives me crazy. And that, unfortunately, is a little bit why the recruitment industry doesn't have a great reputation, because oftentimes the experience that the candidates get is not good. And I think because of my background being in sales, you know, for me, that's just a fundamental. It's a basic. I mean, you know, you don't see a customer and then not speak to them for 6 or 12 months. You know, you're in constant communication, you're engaging with them, you're trying to add value. And that's the same for me, even though fundamentally it's the business that's paying the bill. It's the, I see my customer is both the client and the candidate, because at the end of the day, for me, it's really important that they both have a good experience. And also it's important for my clients that the candidates have a good experience, because even though, you know, I'm working for myself, when I reach out to a client, to a candidate on behalf of a client, that is essentially the first experience that person is having of that business.
10,000 followers is exactly what the recruiting process has brought with you, or was that before in your other roles as well? As
no, I would say it's doubled in the last 12 months, but a lot of that has also come from the podcast, actually, I have to say as well. But yeah, so then of course we work with both the client and the candidate in terms of, once the client has made a decision about who they would like to recruit, we work with them both to make sure that an agreement can be negotiated. And then actually, right up until the point and beyond the point that the candidate started with the company, we're working with the client in terms of helping them with onboarding support, making sure everything is prepared for when the candidate starts, and then also following up with the candidate and the client afterwards to make sure that they're both happy, and that, you know, we can be that, let's say, neutral person that can support and provide value to hopefully both people. And that's why, actually, you know, I provide a what we call a kind of a retention guarantee, where if candidates leave or don't work within a certain period of time, we will run the search again at no cost to the client. Because when I recommend somebody for the role, then, you know, I have a strong belief that they're the right person. So if they don't work, because of course, as much as I would love to tell you everything is 100%, but it's just not the reality. So if it doesn't work, you know, it's my responsibility to then still go out and find somebody else that's suitable for the role for the client at no extra fee for, or no extra cost for the client.
The service value. So for the next steps for yourself and for our industry and for HR and for recruiting, et cetera, what's the next big thing? What's happening?
The ability to handle change and transformation is vital. And actually, you could probably argue that if I speak specifically about the outdoor industry, we're a little bit, as an industry, a little bit reluctant to change sometimes, and quite conservative, maybe a little bit old fashioned. But, you know, we cannot be like that. You know, the industry, the market, the world is moving and evolving so quickly. I think for me, when I'm speaking to clients now, the type of thing that clients are looking for is people that are And of course, I'm working on leadership roles. So it's people that have successfully been able to drive transformations and change. So the type of skills they're looking for is, you know, being able to deal with ambiguity, being adaptable, having high adaptability, being very agile, you know, those kind of three A's. That's really, really vital in today's environment. But also it's about having a vision. But it's not just about having a vision. It's being able to communicate that vision and then being able to work with a team to build a plan to execute that vision. So that's also another area. And one of the things I hear a lot of, particularly with small, medium-sized companies, it's that kind of entrepreneurial mindset they're looking for. I think one of the biggest mismatches I see at the moment is that candidates are coming from larger companies and coming into smaller businesses. And not all the time, for sure, because there are, of course, exceptions. But when people have worked within a larger company in a very clear framework, in a very large, well-supported organization, moving into a smaller, medium-sized business that's a little bit more kind of everybody doing everything and, you know, all hands on deck to move the business forward, that kind of entrepreneurial mindset needs to be there in people's minds. And that sometimes is quite difficult for people to come from. You know, anybody that's coming maybe from Nike or Adi or VF even, people from those size businesses moving into smaller ones isn't always so obvious, so straightforward. So that's something that a lot of clients are really looking for, without a doubt.
Mm. And when I was preparing myself of what is interesting for me, myself, my role, all the people I work with and all the responsibilities you were saying, I think it's exactly how it feels. I think I would not need to change because I have that anyhow. And I have, because of that, a lot of restrictions and a lot of, I would not call it conflicts, but of course they were, because of having always kind of agile mindset and trying to get over. And this is not only outdoor industry, of course, this is more personality driven in any kind of field and cross industry stuff. So anyhow, not to bring in too much of myself, I was thinking on, there are still two questions. One is, what will be the game changers and what are the hurdle constructions to get that out of the ways and out of our mindsets? But maybe we can go there, because I thought, how do you personally, just as Dan, and not of as we both know, podcasts are podcasts, but we are here to have something like a personal opinion stuff as well. I have lots of thoughts, conversations, discussions, and sometimes conflicts on the topics agility, home office, gender, and politics. And politics, especially how much politics belong to company. So on these, we already touched too, the agility thing and the home office thing. So maybe it's on you to... Do you want to give us your personal setting on exactly what's that? Because for me, in my other role, it's so super important. It's every day. Like, should I touch it now or not?
It's a little bit strange. My experience is throughout my career up until 2020, when I left the industry, I had always had male managers. I had had one very strong female leader in my career, which actually is the founder of Columbia Sportswear, Gert Boyle, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago. But obviously she was at a different level to what I was at that time. Then when I left the industry, as I mentioned, I worked for a Finnish lifestyle brand called Marimekko, and I was a member of the executive board, and the executive board was 80% female. And that almost was going a little bit, maybe too much the other way. But what is very clear is that when there is diversity of thought, whether that be gender related, whether that be cultural, race, whatever it be, when there is diversity of thought within teams, the output, the innovation of those teams is proven to be at a higher level. And I see in our industry, which is great to see, more and more female leaders, in senior, very senior positions. I mean, you know, if you take the largest sporting goods and outdoor retailer in the world, is Decathlon, and you know they have an extremely well qualified and an extremely visionary and engaging leader, Barbara. So it's definitely happening. And I think we need to continue moving in that direction, because I think the danger is always that, and you talked about, you mentioned it somehow a little bit a few minutes ago, is that we can get a little bit stuck in our comfort zones. And the danger in recruitment is that we hire people that are like us, because that's our comfort zone. And that's really easy to do. And I've absolutely been really guilty of that in the past. But when we bring in that diversity of thought, you know, the impact, you know, can be quite profound. And but you have to be open to it. So I think that's something that as an industry we need to continue to promote and encourage and push. And it's something from a recruitment point of view that I definitely do. And in fact, I've placed more female leaders than I have men in my 2 years since I've been doing this. But it's on the other hand, it's not easy, because when I look at the podcast, getting female leaders to join my podcast is not easy. I don't know what the ratio is. I would guess it's probably 20%, 80-20 at the moment. So I think it's getting better, but there's this deep-rooted white male part of our industry that is evolving. It is getting better, but it's slowly. And I'm definitely not advocating that, you know, we should define, it should be statistics driven. You know, we should say, okay, it should be 50-50. You know, at the end of the day, you should have the best people in any role, in any position, in any company, whatever gender, whatever culture, whatever race they are. But we must keep in mind this diversity of thought, and what impact that has in terms of creativity, of innovation, because it's clearly proven that the results are stronger. And you only need to look at the stock market to see the businesses that have a more balanced leadership team deliver on average better return on investment to the stock market, to their shareholders, than businesses that are less balanced. So
I just as a summary, because I thought I'm not native in English, obviously, and I should have called it the diversity question, because it's not only on men and women. And this is what I experience in a daily thing, the openness of thoughts and the openness of educational levels. There's so many things that change, and I already experienced that in the ISPO times, that my best, I would not call it performing, but the best team constellations, the best colleagues, or whatever the right word would be, their parents definitely were younger than I am. So with a huge expertise, with a huge passion, hungriness for whatever, and if it comes to the old judging models on how agile do we need to be, what are the systems, what's kind, and I should have called it diversity, because I really do not, I wanted to hear your opinion on the whole thing, and you delivered to say, because this is part of the recruitment process so much, to make sure that all the decision makers are future minded, because otherwise it's not good for our industry and it's not good for everything we stand for. So, and this is then the last question before we come to our spontaneous questions. Politics. We see a right movement, which is like most horrible. And I try really to choose and to use every channel to make sure that we have the right discussions in place. But of course, internally with our company, we had that conversation, well, how far can we go? And this conversation started because I was some of my best friends are teachers, and the teachers in school are not allowed to hand over their personal attitude. And of course, the democracy needs to deliver the full picture of everything. And I had a longer discussion with the kids like every week since some month. Where do you see that for C-leaders, C-suites, influencing people, all your channels? How do you manage that one? And is there anything you discover?
I don't want to use the word scary, although that's the word that instinctively comes to my mind. But, you know, as a Brit living in France and seeing the right-wing party growing in strength, it is somehow scary. You know, the extreme, if you go along the extreme path, does that mean that at some point, you know, I need to leave France? So that's definitely very scary. I think in terms of leaders within our industry, I think it's difficult to find the right way to communicate around this. I think you can't, you shouldn't give clear statements around right or left, because at the end of the day, I think, as with everything, you know, fundamentally, for me, it's a balance. You know, there are things that you can take that resonate and that make sense on both sides, and there are things that absolutely do not make sense. And of course, it's the things on the extremes that usually don't make sense. I think for businesses to input politics in the way they operate, the way they communicate, is it their position to do that? Maybe. I don't know. I don't have the solution here. I think you can't be clear, because I think it's such a complex topic that it's very difficult to clearly align yourself to one area. I think what you can do is say what you believe in terms of the importance of being kind, in terms of the importance of having a diverse environment, whatever that means. But I think connecting it directly to politics for me is quite difficult and potentially quite dangerous. And I think the reality is that most people have such a disdain or distrust for politicians that I'm not sure there's value in their doing that anyway, because I think especially the younger generation, there's no connection, there's no empathy with politicians between that generation. And yeah, I don't know. Honestly, it's a really tough topic, and it's
We need to raise it as fast as possible and the scale as much as possible, because you move from France to where you want to move, but the right movement is not. So this is happening everywhere. And seeing the elections last 2 weeks here in Germany, I decided for myself, I start with the podcast and end with the moderations, because I always have the neutral role somehow in a moderator. And I'm more asking questions to get a holistic picture. And politics definitely did not belong to, if it was on a different level than environment and ecosystems. And this is what I try to enlarge. But I will discuss this. I think this is my recommendation for my own work life. I will discuss that with the company. I will discuss that with all the people in the company, how far we go with that, because definitely we need to use all the channels to step against. Yeah. And yeah, so thanks for sharing your thoughts. I hope I can convince you we both run some podcast sessions on how to involve politically in CCD. It's important. Yeah. Okay. So, different topic. Are you ready for some spontaneous questions?
Let's go. Well, whether I'm ready or not, we'll see. But
we'll see. So they are all under the headline, how could this happen to me? And how could this happen to me leads to, it could be very, very positive or challenging in a way or whatever. And it's just share. It's more personality side. So the most embarrassing business moment.
I'm not sure I would call this a business moment, but it's a professional moment. And I can't believe I'm going to repeat this on a podcast. So I'm hoping that nobody's listening at this point. So when I was working as a Saturday boy, so a weekend job in a ski shop when I was a teenager, I was very lucky that my boss took me to a trade show, a trade fair. So in those days in the UK, it was called Soltex. It's now called Slide. And there was a big party one evening, as we all, you know, we know there are usually industry parties. And I was very young and very naive and drunk too much. And the next day at the trade fair, I was feeling a little bit sick, a little bit worse for wear. And I ended up, I said, I need to just go. And I went to the toilet. And unfortunately, I actually passed out in a toilet cubicle at a trade fair and was found by the Red Cross. So, not my proudest moment, but definitely my most embarrassing moment professionally. Professionally, I'm not even sure I'd call it professionally because it was a long time ago, but it's the thing that sticks in my mind always.
Your biggest surprise?
Biggest surprise, I think, is I was brought up that education is very important, and without a good education, you won't succeed. So my biggest surprise is the fact that, and I guess it's people's own understanding of the word of achievement and success, but I've had what I consider to be a great career. You know, I've learned a lot. I've worked for some amazing businesses. I've achieved, you know, some senior positions, and I have very little formal education. I left college at a very early age. So I think what I've achieved without formal education is probably my my biggest surprise.
Nice one. Your most outstanding idea.
This is a difficult one. It's not. It's easy. It's asking my wife to marry me. That's easily my best idea.
This is really nice. Greetings to her. Your craziest journey could be like figuratively personal, whatever.
I think my career path, actually. I think the first part of my career when I was in retail, I was not really ambitious. I was happy doing what I was doing. Then as I got older, I became ambitious. And if you'd said to a 25-year-old me that, 20 years later, I would be sitting on the executive board of a public company, I would have been like, you're completely crazy. So I think my career, is the craziest journey. And now, you know, so it was kind of retail, not motivated, corporate, very ambitious, very career, very, very financially driven. And now much more entrepreneurial, away from corporate life, much less financially driven, much more considering what I can do to give back and what value I can provide to others. So I think it's been a crazy journey, actually, is a good way to describe it.
And normally I do not comment anything, but in this case, I wanted to help you out because the journey you described on being part of a community, which somehow makes you change and then decide to come back, et cetera. So this is super crazy, but of course, something which we all experience at a specific point. So you found your way anyhow. So your best deal.
Well, personally, my best deal would have to be the same as my my best outstanding idea. So it's the fact that my wife agrees to get married. Professionally, I would say It's definitely not my biggest deal, but my best deal was in the early days when I was the country manager for Colombia in the UK. We had to really clean up our distribution. We were really badly distributed with some heavy discounters, and we built a plan to land, let's say, the lighthouse, the most influential specialty retailers. And so when we got arguably the best one of those on board, I think that was felt amazing, because it was quite a journey. So getting them back on board was something I'm very proud of at the time. I mean, it's a long time ago now, but yeah.
Your contribution to making the world a little better.
Well, I hope my podcast, I mean, I didn't really talk about that at all, but it feels bad to talk about my podcast on somebody else's podcast. But I started Sports and Outdoor Mentors because when I started my recruitment company, I wanted to provide more value to the candidates. But I realized that fundamentally with what I do, I disappoint 99% of people because only one person gets the job. So I was like, well, how can I provide more value? And that's how I came up with the idea of the podcast, where I, like yourself, you know, I'm interviewing senior leaders in the industry, getting them to share their experiences, building brands, leading teams, and hopefully those stories help others on their own career path. So I hope that whether it's making the world a little bit better, I'm not sure, but at least I hope it helps others that can maybe make the world a little bit better.
And yeah, and again, a comment, because that was when you invited me as well. It's the same thing, because we do have the same energy in terms of this is what we want to share. And please speak on your podcast as much as you like, because it's brilliant. And it's exactly what we're there for, to enlighten other people with inspirations from people who already did it. And we can hopefully open some channels which normally would not find their way. So this is... your most reliable source, what is there, any like belief or mantra or person or tree or whatever?
No, there's no mantra or anything like that. I guess maybe one thing, actually, saying that, I believe that it's better to do less and do it better. So less but better is something that I try and kind of keep in mind with everything that I do. Other than that, there are a few people that I know that I can go to and rely on getting good feedback and good insights. So one is some previous colleagues, some previous bosses, my wife. But yeah, nothing really stands out there.
Okay. Your most inspiring moment, or who inspired you in a special and sustainable way?
I think in my early days, in my corporate career, I was very inspired by corporate leaders that had climbed the ladder and were able to stand up in front on a stage and really inspire and motivate people. And one particularly stands out in my mind, a gentleman called Mick McCormick, who was, I can't remember his exact position, but he was very high up at Columbia Sportswear in the US, I think reporting directly to the CEO. He was incredibly inspiring. But I think it's interesting because now what's inspiring for me is different to what it was then. I think now I'm very inspired by entrepreneurs that have started something from nothing and, you know, have really built something that's meaningful and purposeful. So I think, yeah, I mean, Nick Hounsfield, who's the founder of The Wave in the UK, which is an inland surf pool, which is amazing. And the work he does around mental health, I think, those would be two people that come to mind.
Would you recommend a book or a podcast that
inspired
you?
A podcast, there's probably two that stand out for me. So I love Acquired, which is a US originally tech focused podcast where it's two journalists, or sorry, one journalist, one investor, and they deep dive into companies. So, and their episodes are long, so they're like 3-4 hours, even 9 hours. I think they split it into three for Microsoft recently, but they've done one on Nike, on LVMH, and they're brilliant. They're super deep dive, so, you know, good for a long car journey or flight, but that's great. Or How I Built This as well, which is another US one where the host is interviewing founders of businesses. That's another one that I really like as well.
Super good. We share that in the show notes specifically. And how can people get in touch with you, Dan?
Well, I probably already gave that away earlier on. As I said, I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn for my job. So that's usually the easiest way to get hold of me.
Good. So right now, that would be the moment. Do you want to share something which you did not mention until now? And is there anything you want to give to me or to the audience or to yourself as the summary?
Well, first of all, thank you, Kim, for inviting me to join you on the podcast. It's always nice to chat and to get to know each other a little bit better, which is great. I think the only message I would give is that, and this is probably aimed more to people that are at the early days in their career, is try things. You know, try lots of things. Don't worry about failing. You know, when you're young, you don't have commitments. You know, you can work in lots of different companies. You can launch lots of different businesses. And because you're young and you don't have commitments, it's much easier to do that. When you get to my age, to do that, it's much more difficult. And if there's one regret I have, is that I spent a very long time in companies at an early age, and I've moved a lot in the latter part of my career, and I wish it had been the other way around. I wish I'd have, because I realized that, you know, whenever you do something new, you just learn a massive amount, and it's brilliant. So do that when you're younger, and it will make, I believe, your career and your life much more fulfilling. So that would be my parting comment.
Thank you so much, Dan. Hope to see each other soon. And for all our listeners in your podcast and in my podcast as well, and now in ours, which is really nice, share all this brilliant information and inspire your HR team not to be the operative side, but give them the power to be strategic attitude thinking. So this is a wonderful outcome. Thank you, Dan. I feel that. So have a very good day. Have a very good day to all our listeners across the world, hopefully, you know, but global universe, and take care and speak soon.
Thanks a lot, Kim. Take care.
Hey, to jump off with a personal message. Do you like my podcast or not? Then help me get better or stay good, preferably via LinkedIn. And please spread the word, share it, and make our content even more relevant. Thank you very much, and see you next time.